The Fatal Boots. The Fatal Boots, January. The birth of the year. Some poet has observed that if any man would write down what has really happened to him in this mortal life, he would be sure to make a good book, though he never had met with a single adventure from his birth to his burial. How much more, then, must I, who have had adventures, most singular, pathetic, and unparalleled, be able to compile an instructive and entertaining volume for the use of the public? I don't mean to say that I have killed lions, or seen the wonders of travel in the deserts of Arabia or Prussia, or that I have been a very fashionable character, living with dukes and peeresses, and writing my recollections of them, as the way now is. I never left this my native isle, nor spoke to a lord, except an Irish one, who had rooms in our house, and forgot to pay 3 weeks' lodging and extras, but, as our immortal bard observes, I have in the course of my existence been so eaten up by the slugs and harrows of outrageous fortune, and have been the object of such continual and extraordinary ill luck, that I believe it would melt the heart of a milestone to read of it, that is, if a milestone had a heart of anything but stone. 12 of my adventures, suitable for meditation and perusal during the 12 months of the year, have been arranged by me for this work. They contain a part of the history of a great, and, confidently I may say, a good man. I was not a spendthrift like other men. I never wronged any man of a shilling, though I am as sharp a fellow at a bargain as any in Europe. I never injured a fellow creature, on the contrary, on several occasions, when injured myself, have shown the most wonderful forbearance. I come of a tolerably good family, and yet, born to wealth, of an inoffensive disposition, careful of the money that I had, and eager to get more, I have been going downhill ever since my journey of life began, and have been pursued by a complication of misfortune such as surely never happened to any man but the unhappy Bob Stubbs. Bob Stubbs is my name, and I haven't got a shilling. I've borne the commission of lieutenant in the service of King George, and am now, but never mind what I am now, for the public will know in a few pages more. My father was of the Suffolk Stubbses, a well-to-do gentleman of Bungay. My grandfather had been a respected attorney in that town, and left my pop a pretty little fortune. I was thus the inheritor of competence, and ought to be at this moment a gentleman. My misfortunes may be said to have commenced about a year before my birth, when my papa, a young fellow pretending to study the law in London, fell madly in love with Miss Smith, the daughter of a tradesman, who did not give her a sixpence, and afterwards became bankrupt. My papa married this Miss Smith, and carried her off to the country, where I was born, in an evil hour for me. Were I to attempt to describe my early years, you would laugh at me as an impostor, but the following letter from Mama to a friend, after her marriage, will pretty well show you what a poor foolish creature she was, and what a reckless extravagant fellow was my other unfortunate parent. To Miss Eliza Kicks, in Gracechurch Street, London. Oh, Eliza! Your Susan is the happiest girl under heaven. My Thomas is an angel. Not a tall grenadier-like looking fellow, such as I always vowed I would marry, on the contrary, he is what the world would call dumpy, and I hesitate not to confess that his eyes have a cast in them. But what then? When one of his eyes is fixed on me, and one on my babe, they are lighted up with an affection which my pen cannot describe, and which, certainly, was never bestowed upon any woman so strongly as upon your happy Susan Stubbs. When he comes home from shooting, or the farm, if you could see dear Thomas with me and our dear little Bob. As I sit on one knee, and baby on the other, and as he dances us both about, I often wish that we had Sir Joshua, or some great painter, to depict the group, for sure it is the prettiest picture in the whole world, to see three such loving merry people. Dear baby is the most lovely little creature that can possibly be, the very image of Papa. He is cutting his teeth, and the delight of everybody. Nurse says that, when he is older he will get rid of his squint, and his hair will get a great deal less red. Dr. Bates is as kind, and skillful, and attentive as we could desire. Think what a blessing to have had him. Ever since poor baby's birth, it has never had a day of quiet, and he has been obliged to give it from 3 to 4 doses every week. How thankful ought we to be that the dear thing is as well as it is. It got through the measles wonderfully, then it had a little rash, and then a nasty whooping cough, and then a fever, and continual pains in its poor little stomach, crying, poor dear child, from morning till night. But dear Tom is an excellent nurse, and many a night has he had no sleep, dear man. In consequence of the poor little baby. He walks up and down with it for hours, singing a kind of song, dear fellow, he has no more voice than a tea kettle, and bobbing his head backwards and forwards, and looking, in his nightcap and dressing gown, so droll. Oh, Eliza! How you would laugh to see him! We have one of the best nursemaids in the world, an Irish woman, who is as fond of baby almost as his mother, but that can never be. She takes it to walk in the park for hours together, and I really don't know why Thomas dislikes her. He says she is tipsy, very often, and slovenly, which I cannot conceive. To be sure, the nurse is sadly dirty, and sometimes smells very strong of gin. But what of that? These little drawbacks only make home more pleasant. When one thinks how many mothers have no nursemaids, how many poor dear children have no doctors, ought we not to be thankful for Mary Maloney, and that Dr. Bates's bill is £47? How ill must dear baby have been, to require so much physic? But they are a sad expense, these dear babies, after all. Fancy, Eliza, how much this Mary Maloney costs us. 10 shillings every week, a glass of brandy or gin at dinner, 3 pint bottles of Mr. Thrale's best porter every day, making 21 in a week, and 990 in the 11 months she has been with us. Then, for baby, there is Dr. Bates's bill of 45 guineas, 2 guineas for christening, 20 for a grand christening supper and ball, rich Uncle John mortally offended because he was made godfather, and had to give baby a silver cup, he has struck Thomas out of his will, and old Mr. Firkin quite as much hurt because he was not asked, he will not speak to me or Thomas in consequence, 20 guineas for flannels, laces, little gowns, caps, napkins, and such baby's wear, and all this out of 300 liters a year. But Thomas expects to make a great deal by his farm. We have got the most charming country house you can imagine. It is quite shut in by trees, and so retired that, though only 30 miles from London, the post comes to us but once a week. The roads, it must be confessed, are execrable. It is winter now, and we are up to our knees in mud and snow. But oh, Eliza! How happy we are, with Thomas. He has had a sad attack of rheumatism, dear man, and little Bobby, and our kind friend Dr. Bates, who comes so far to see us. I leave you to fancy that we have a charming merry party, and do not care for all the Guy Yetis of Ranelagh. Adieu. Dear baby is crying for his mama. 1,000 kisses from your affectionate Susan Stubbs. There it is. Doctor's bills, gentleman farming, 21 pints of porter a week. In this way my unnatural parents were already robbing me of my property. February. Cutting weather. I have called this chapter Cutting Weather, partly in compliment to the month of February, and partly in respect of my own misfortunes, which you are going to read about. For I have often thought that January, which is mostly twelfth cake and holiday time, is like the first 4 or 5 years of a little boy's life, then comes dismal February, and the working days with it, when chaps begin to look out for themselves, after the Christmas and the New Year's heyday and merrymaking are over, which our infancy may well be said to be. Well can I recollect that bitter 1st of February, when I first launched out into the world and appeared at Dr. Swishtail's Academy. I began at school that life of prudence and economy which I have carried on ever since. My mother gave me 18 pence on setting out, poor soul. I thought her heart would break as she kissed me, and bade God bless me, and, besides, I had a small capital of my own which I had amassed for a year previous. I'll tell you, what I used to do. Wherever I saw 6 halfpence I took 1. If it was asked for I said I had taken it and gave it back, if it was not missed, I said nothing about it, as why should I? Those who don't miss their money, don't lose their money. So I had a little private fortune of 3 shillings, besides mother's 18 pence. At school they called me the copper merchant, I had such lots of it. Now, even at a preparatory school, a well-regulated boy may better himself, and I can tell you I did. I never was in any quarrels, I never was very high in the class or very low, but there was no chap so much respected, and why? I'd always money. The other boys spent all theirs in the first day or two, and they gave me plenty of cakes and barley sugar then, I can tell you. I'd no need to spend my own money, for they would insist upon treating me. Well, in a week, when theirs was gone, and they had but their 3 pence a week to look to for the rest of the half year, what did I do? Why, I am proud to say that 3 halfpence out of the 3 pence a week of almost all the young gentlemen at Dr. Swishtail's, came into my pocket. Suppose, for instance, Tom Hicks wanted a slice of gingerbread, who had the money? Little Bob Stubbs, to be sure. Hicks, I used to say, I'll buy you 3 halfpence of gingerbread, if you'll give me 3 pence next Saturday. And he agreed, and next Saturday came, and he very often could not pay me more than 3 halfpence. Then there was the 3 pence I was to have the next Saturday. I'll tell you what I did for a whole half year. I lent a chap, by the name of Dick Bunting, 3 halfpence the first Saturday for 3 pence the next. He could not pay me more than half when Saturday came, and I'm blessed if I did not make him pay me 3 halfpence for 3 and 20 weeks running, making 2 shillings and 10 pence halfpenny. But he was a sad dishonorable fellow, Dick Bunting, for after I'd been so kind to him, and let him off for 3 and 20 weeks the money he owed me, holidays came, and threepence he owed me still. Well, according to the common principles of practice, after 6 weeks holidays, he ought to have paid me exactly 16 shillings, which was my due. For the first week the 3d would be 6d. Fourth week, 4s. Second week, 1s. Fifth week, 8s. Third week, 2s. Sixth week, 16s. Nothing could be more just, and yet, will it be believed? When Bunting came back he offered me 3 halfpence. The mean, dishonest scoundrel. However, I was even with him, I can tell you. He spent all his money in a fortnight, and then I screwed him down. I made him, besides giving me a penny for a penny, pay me a quarter of his bread and butter at breakfast and a quarter of his cheese at supper, and before the half year was out, I got from him a silver fruit knife, a box of compasses, and a very pretty silver-laced waistcoat, in which I went home as proud as a king, and, what's more, I had no less than 3 golden guineas in the pocket of it, besides 15 shillings, the knife, and a brass bottle screw, which I got from another chap. It wasn't bad interest for 12 shillings, which was all the money I'd had in the year, was it? Hi-o. I've often wished that I could get such a chance again in this wicked world, but men are more avaricious now than they used to be in those dear early days. Well, I went home in my new waistcoat as fine as a peacock, and when I gave the bottle screw to my father, begging him to take it as a token of my affection for him, my dear mother burst into such a fit of tears as I never saw, and kissed and hugged me fit to smother me. Bless him, says she, to think of his old father. And where did you purchase it, Bob? Why, mother, says I purchased it out of my savings, which was as true as the gospel. When I said this, mother looked round to father, smiling, although she had tears in her eyes, and she took his hand, and with her other hand drew me to her. Is he not a noble boy? Says she to my father, and only 9 years old. Faith, says my father, he is a good lad, Susan. Thank thee, my boy, and here is a crown piece in return for thy bottle screw. It shall open us a bottle of the very best too, says my father. And he kept his word. I always was fond of good wine, though never, from a motive of proper self-denial, having any in my cellar, and, by Jupiter, on this night I had my little skinful, for there was no stinting, so pleased were my dear parents with the bottle screw. The best of it was, it only cost me 3d originally, which a chap could not pay me. Seeing this game was such a good one, I became very generous towards my parents, and a capital way it is to encourage liberality in children. I gave Mama a very neat brass thimble, and she gave me a 1/2 guinea piece. Then I gave her a very pretty needle book, which I made myself with an ace of spades from a new pack of cards we had, and I got Sally, our maid, to cover it with a bit of pink satin her mistress had given her, and I made the leaves of the book, which I vandyked very nicely, out of a piece of flannel I had it round my neck for a sore throat. It smelt a little of hartshorn, but it was a beautiful needle book, and Mama was so delighted with it, that she went into town and bought me a gold-laced hat. Then I bought Papa a pretty china tobacco stopper, but I am sorry to say of my dear father that he was not so generous as my Mama or myself, for he only burst out laughing, and did not give me so much as a 1/2-crown piece, which was the least I expected from him. I shan't give you anything, Bob, this time, says he, and I wish, my boy, you would not make any more such presents, for, really, they are too expensive. Expensive indeed. I hate meanness, even in a father. I must tell you about the silver-edged waistcoat which Bunting gave me. Mama asked me about it, and I told her the truth, that it was a present from one of the boys for my kindness to him. Well, what does she do but writes back to Dr. Swishtail, when I went to school, thanking him for his attention to her dear son, and sending a shilling to the good and grateful little boy who had given me the waistcoat. What waistcoat is it, says the doctor to me, and who gave it to you? Bunting gave it me, sir, says I. Call Bunting. And up the little ungrateful chap came. Would you believe it, he burst into tears.